You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 113, King Notch iPhone. This week on the podcast, we examine the iPhone 10, but not before we pick apart a rather silly Samsung Galaxy ad that tries to take Apple down a notch. Stay tuned for that discussion. That's coming up next on The Impromptu. Well, I guess we're talking about iPhone 10, aren't we?
Yeah.
This is the big one.
Mm-hmm.
People get to hear about a phone they can't afford.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. One phone you can't afford and you'll have to live vicariously through us. Or actually through Michael, because I can't afford it either. iPhone 10 is out and it costs $9.99.
US.
No, I'm just kidding.
You wish it cost $9.99.
Apple changed
here.
Their mind. They're only going to sell it for $9, and they're going to amortize the cost of that phone over the next 5 years.
Yeah, they've brought out a drastically improved version of the upgrade program.
Yeah,
for pennies a day,
thing is, at Apple, we don't really care about profits. The thing is, we just want you to have a better experience. We're selfless that way.
Yeah.
We don't need to make that much
profit. Yeah, we haven't gotten to be almost the first $1 trillion company in the world.
We only make more Exxon. I think they make more than ExxonMobil now.
In
terms of cash reserves,
their market cap is now over $900 billion.
Yeah, it's insane.
They are insanely close to being the first $1 trillion company.
That's incredible.
And as a result of the iPhone 10 launch, they have surpassed Samsung for market share. Again.
Yep.
Eat it, suckers. Your stupid ad where you make fun of the notch will not avail you. Yeah, that's right. Samsung made a stupid ad where
I haven't seen it. They're making fun of the notch now?
Yeah, let's take a minute to talk about this ad before we get to the iPhone 10.
Wait, okay, so wait, when do we start? Is this it?
This is it.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
I'll stop talking. So you're gonna open the episode on this?
Oh no, I was hoping this would be a cold open.
I don't know if I know that.
No, just leave all this in. I kinda wanna do my brother and me sort of thing. Anyways. Actually, have you heard My Brother and Me?
No, I don't know what
it
is.
So good. You have to listen to it. Yes, that's right. This show is now a plug for My Brother and Me. An awesome podcast about the wacky adventures of the McElroy brothers.
So the iPhone 10 is actually out. You have it.
Yes. I am holding an iPhone 10 right now. It is magical.
I can confirm that.
Yes. But we will get to that in a minute. First, we will talk about this stupid Samsung ad. So Samsung came out with an ad that's basically making fun of the iPhone 10 and the iPhone in general, where they're basically like, you need to grow up and upgrade to a Galaxy. That's like the gist of the ad. And it's basically the life of this one guy who has an iPhone. Like, he gets the first iPhone, and it's just this series of vignettes with each iPhone release. And it's like, he gets the first iPhone, he's all excited, and then later he's exchanging numbers with someone, and they have a giant Samsung phone, and she's just like writing the number on a freaking memo pad, which, by the way, does not put the number into your contacts. You would still have to add it after the fact. But I guess they didn't think about that part. So he's typing in the number into the contacts app, and she's just scribbling it, which does absolutely nothing. And he's like, wow, that's a big phone. And then it cuts to another scene, and they're on a deck by a lake, and they're fooling around, and then they get pushed into the water, and he's like putting his iPhone in a bowl of rice, and she's just like, ha, my phone's fine, ha, 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 because my Samsung Galaxy is water resistant. You know, the feature that Apple has now, and therefore it's a non-issue, and they've had it for 3 years, but fine, cool, I guess.
I thought it wasn't official till the iPhone 8, or was it the iPhone 7?
No, the 7 was the first one where they were officially like, yes, it's water resistant. Though the 6S did have rubber gaskets, so technically that was water resistant as well.
Yeah, because I think
just
I remember
didn't advertise
somebody
it.
Did a submerging that phone in water test for the 6S. Plus, even though it was never official from Apple in any of their marketing materials.
Yeah.
But they were making moves.
Internally, they had added waterproofing. So yeah, then the next one, of course, the headphone jack. You know, the thing they got rid of in the latest Galaxy phones. Or did they? No, they didn't. They didn't get rid of it. But they will.
Although almost every reviewer that I've seen that has been reviewing any Android phone without a headphone jack now, I think it's The Verge. They're very careful to say, I think even the Pixel now doesn't have, Pixel 2 doesn't have a headphone jack. And they always say any phone without a headphone jack sucks.
Yeah.
Which is just stupid.
Really, that's just Nilay Patel. That's
the guy I'm talking
is
about.
Nilay Patel. He's a character.
They all come with adapters. The iPhone comes with the adapter.
Yeah.
It's a non-issue.
Yeah, of course it is. So anyways, they're like, they had like, I think that vignette made the least sense because it was just like, he was like struggling to listen to music or something. And then the people with their Galaxy phone, they were just like enjoying themselves, and it just felt very forced and stilted, and it made absolutely no sense at all. But they just had
obviously that doesn't happen in real life.
Yeah.
In that kind of scenario.
And it's like AirPlay is a thing, so you can just literally push whatever you have on your phone to a TV or a wireless speaker or whatever. But, you know, dongles, lol. So, they had that scene. And then fast forward to now, and he has a Galaxy phone. He's all grown up now. And he walks past a line of people waiting for the iPhone X, and one of them has a haircut with the notch, who looks at him. Yeah, I'm serious. This is an actual thing that happens. He walks past the line, and there's a guy with a haircut with the notch. And then they're like, it's time to grow up. Upgrade to a Galaxy now. And it's like, okay, cool. What does your phone actually do that's worth it? Because it seems to me this entire ad was about how the iPhone used to suck in certain ways, but it doesn't now.
Yeah.
So really, what is the point of your ad even?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, they bring up things that are no longer issues.
Yeah.
The iPhone X and the iPhone 8 suffer from none of these problems.
Yeah, and it just goes to show you, because like I talked to, and some of my immediate family uses Android, and the reality is that even the stuff that Samsung is talking about, the stuff that they're touting from about their own phones, like most people either don't care, don't know, or don't really find value in features like that. They just care about having a cheap phone that works.
Yeah.
Right? And that's actually one of the biggest complaints that people have about iPhones is the cost. And a lot of the stuff that you and I take for granted, or the stuff that we appreciate, the extra polish, the extra fit and finish of the iPhone, the things where we know empirically are a better experience on iOS, you can try and communicate that to somebody, but ultimately sometimes someone will just say, well, I just got this phone for $50 and it works.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just don't care about
and
that stuff.
That's fine, but it doesn't stop the iPhone from being the better phone.
I understand that. I'm just trying to make the point that even what Samsung is doing, whether they think that's effective or not, even their own ad might not be effective to Android users.
Yeah. Well, because their phones are super expensive now too. The S8, the Note 8, those are...
No one's getting those phones on a $0 contract.
The Note 8, that is a $1,000 phone. That is an iPhone 10, basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for them to say the iPhone is this expensive, overpriced, whatever... No, you're charging the same prices.
The only difference is that sometimes that they'll have specials on some of those Android phones. They'll get like rebates or gift cards.
Stuff
when you buy. But people factor all of that into the cost of actually acquiring that.
Sure.
Thing.
But then another big part of that is Samsung and other Android OEMs are more willing to go along with carriers. And so you end up with Galaxy phones that are preloaded with a shit ton of Verizon garbage or T-Mobile garbage
or it's all terrible.
AT&T garbage. The iPhone has nothing. It is an iPhone. The stock apps are the stock apps.
Yeah.
You don't get anything different with any carrier.
Well, it's all rosy at first when they get the new phone, but then after they start using it for a year or two or even longer and they start to have problems, they realize that they can't get support for it. There are no OS updates. Like I've heard people, and you know what? This is why some people legitimately switch too.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like I'm saying, like I don't care whether you use Android or iPhone. I'm just presenting facts and real life situations from people that I've talked to, you know, where some people have switched from Android to iPhone because of those reasons, because like I can walk into an Apple store and get support immediately.
Yeah.
I get OS upgrades for God knows how many years and it still works more or less. Whereas Android, like I've seen people get fed up and they, you know, they went in thinking really highly of Android,
mm-hmm.
but then by the end, like, this phone is junk. It doesn't work right. The battery is dying all the time. I have to constantly recharge. This even goes for Google's own products too.
Mm-hmm.
They've had some hit or misses. They've had Google Nexus tablets that have had battery, all sorts of battery life issues where
and
it seemingly works one day, the next day it's completely drained.
And trying to get support for those devices has been utterly abysmal throughout Google's entire...
You can't call anyone.
Yeah.
Who can you call at Google to get support?
Yeah, there's no Google Store. There's the Play Store.
Right.
But good luck.
No, at least maybe Samsung, they've got some retail stores you can walk into.
Yeah, but they don't do repairs at those stores.
Right. So
they have to mail them away.
Oh, Jesus. See, that's just awful.
Yes.
Like, nobody wants to have to wait to have a phone fix.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I could walk in and get a screen replaced. I have to wait, like, maybe 2 hours?
Yeah.
For the repair?
Yeah, Apple Store, you walk in, they're like, okay, cool, we'll do that for you.
They have all the equipment they need to repair your phone.
Yeah.
If they can't repair it under warranty, they replace it under warranty, and you leave the store with a new phone.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. I mean, it's look, we can make fun of it, but like the reality is it's just a silly ad that Samsung did.
Yeah.
And it's not going to sway anyone on the iPhone side.
No, certainly not.
I mean, and is it effective as a marketing campaign to get new Android customers? I don't think so.
No. I'm honestly not sure who it's targeting.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have...
I think they're maybe hoping that they'll get some frustrated iPhone users that are on the fence, but
maybe,
it's like,
but I mean, their marketing team is clearly not as good as Apple's. That much is very clear.
No, because again, good marketing is showing the merits of your product, not attacking someone else.
Yeah, exactly. You don't focus on bashing your competitor. You focus on selling the experience of your own product. You talk about how good your own product is.
Exactly.
Let your product, your service speak for itself.
Yeah.
It just makes you look immature and unprofessional when all you do is focus on how bad the other guy is.
Yeah.
It's just amateur.
And more importantly, you're not telling anyone why they should buy your product. You're spending all of your time bashing someone else. Well, what makes you special? What makes you so good? You're not telling me. So I don't know. And that's kind of a through line for all of Samsung's marketing. They throw a bunch of gimmicks at the wall, hoping one of them sticks. But ultimately, they don't have anything unique to offer. Like, they just make phones.
Right. Because they don't own the ecosystem. I mean, in terms of the hardware they do, but the software, I mean, there's very little they can do.
Yeah, and they always keep trying to do things, but it's never a very holistic experience. The features that they add, the services that they add, it never complements Android. It's always, oh, and then we have this other thing that kind of sits over here, and really, you could just use the Google app, but we have this other thing that replaces it, and we think you'll love it, except you won't. You'll just use the Google one.
There's obviously a reason why Android and even Samsung has a massive market share. But now that Samsung is established as the biggest Android OEM out there, do you think it would take away from their brand or affect their sales in any meaningful way if they were to just ship a vanilla stock Android OS on their current hardware? Do you think people would think less of them? Do you think customers would still buy the product? Because I think
it would be better.
Well, it would be better from a customer's perspective because they would get updates be more stable. But
include some of your apps, include Knox, include some of those things. Because I'm not saying they can't include
proprietary apps, but I'm talking about like all the other bullshit layered on top, all the skins and all the software development time they spend to put this candy coating on what's already an okay operating system.
Yeah.
It just makes it more unstable. So I think they should just give up on TouchWiz.
Yeah, I agree.
But we're not here to talk about Samsung.
Yeah.
We need to talk about this beautiful, new, shiny iPhone X in your hand today, which you were finally able to get not from your pre-order initially on the 3rd of November, but from several repeat attempts to order online and get the reserve and pickup in the store, which you did. So you finally went into the Apple store on Saturday last week and you managed to snag a 64 gig iPhone X.
Yep. So day after, I got up at 5:30 a.m. and when 6 o'clock rolled around, I was on the Apple website ready to go. And the reserve and pickup page opened and bam, there's a phone at Oak Ridge Center. So I was just like, bye. And it reserved it. I got the email, which effectively meant we have set aside an actual device for you. I canceled my pre-order. And then I went over to Oak Ridge for 10 o'clock, which was my window. I ended up getting there around 9:40. I asked if I could get it early and they were like, yeah, sure, because the store wasn't super busy. So they just went ahead and got it for me. And it's a really simple process. Now, basically, in a subsequent email, they tell you that your phone is ready for pickup. And attached to that email is a wallet pass. So you add that pass to your wallet on your iPhone. You go to the Apple Store. They scan the pass. You show them photo ID. They go get your iPhone. And then you just walk out with it. Simple as that.
So how long did you have to wait? Because I hear for the reserve and pickup, you still have to wait in line. There's like a separate line for pickup.
No, I just walked right in. It wasn't busy. There was no line.
Can you guess to me how long you were actually in the store for?
Like 5 minutes.
I mean, it sucks you had to go to that store. That's obviously a lot more farther away than you'd like. But the fact that you were in and out in 5 minutes, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Because I've heard otherwise from people doing the reserve and pickup thing.
Yeah, I think it was because I did it the day after launch. Because at that point, people who had tried to go in line were exhausted from the line experience and they just gave up.
I wonder if it was just that store, because I swear I heard somebody say they did the reserve and pickup and they were in a line for 2 hours to get it. That doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe some stores had a big line for the pickup.
I don't know. Like, you're supposed to pick a 30-minute window and then you show up during that window to get your phone. So it's staggered. Like, there should never be a massive line of people.
That doesn't make sense that you would have a line for that.
I think, you know what the line is for? People that are getting carrier phones.
Oh,
that's what the line is for.
Right, because they got it comes pre-activated, I think, in the box.
Yeah, and they have to set it up in store and stuff. Yeah, that's what the line is for. This is for purely unlocked phones only, which is what I get.
That's why.
So yes, I have a 64 gig iPhone X in space gray, which is utterly stunning.
Now the space gray color looks much better in person than it does on the photos, I gotta say.
Oh yeah.
And the space gray is way nicer looking than any previous iteration of space gray.
Yeah.
Like it's all these other attempts at space gray like seem like complete crap in comparison to the iPhone X.
This
is a really nice looking color.
This isn't space gray so much as space black.
It is more like
from the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Because it's steel.
It's like more like a gun, like a dark gun metal.
Yeah.
On like a high-end car. Like it's a really nice paint job.
Oh yeah. It's an utterly beautiful colorway. Like
I don't know if I can even call it a paint job. It's more like it's a process.
Yeah. The steel has a layer of vapor deposition on it, which gives it the dark tone. And then it's mirror polish.
Of course, it's personal preference. I still think I would go for that white and silver one just because I think it looks really sexy. But
it does look rather nice.
But they both look really nice.
I just prefer this because it kind of makes the display melt even more into the hardware.
Sure. Why? Because the white one has that bright chrome band around it. Yeah,
exactly.
Although that one does have a bit of a chrome band around it.
Oh, it's super shiny.
It's not as bright as the... Yeah, as the other one.
Like it's very stealth, for sure. So
my first impression was that when looking at that was not only is the screen sharper, but it looks like and I know we've said this many times before because Apple has continued to do this over the years with the display. One of their goals has always is to refine the display technology so that it looks like the pixels are on top of the glass, you know what I mean? Rather than below the glass. And for people listening, before we started recording, I put my 6S Plus next to this thing. And it's the difference in the display is noticeable. It's like, it is so night and day, not in only the color reproduction, but it does look like a piece of glass with pixels painted on top. That's how amazing it looks. And it's hard looking at my 6S Plus now, I gotta say. It's time for a new phone.
This phone is absolutely worth the price and worth the wait.
And now you demoed Face ID to me, and the unlocking is insanely fast and accurate. Like, it's way better. Like, I've heard some complaints from people, but the way you did it, I was really impressed with it.
Yeah, it's a lot faster than people think it is.
The only thing that I've heard from people, and I imagine that by next year Apple will have had this ironed out, is that they'll probably work on improving the true depth sensor and camera assembly so that it works at not only farther distances from your face, because right now it has to be pretty close to your face, but also different angles.
Mm, not particularly. It unlocks from arm length.
Mm. I've heard different reports from people. It was on the ATP podcast today. They were saying, I think it was Casey Liss was saying, sometimes if he's like, he gave one example where he's lying down in bed looking at his phone and he doesn't have contacts in and he has to he has to put the phone really close to his eyes in order for it to work. He finds that at a certain distant length. It doesn't work as well. Or if he's on his side.
Well, if his face is obscured, then I can see why that would happen. But if you're on your side and you unlock, if you put the phone sideways and your face is sideways, it works.
Have you tried laying down on your side?
I have woken up, my phone's on the nightstand, I pick it up, it's sideways, I'm sideways, it unlocks.
And it's fine.
Yeah,
interesting.
As long as your face is aligned with the sensor vertically, it's fine. If it's off, then it's not going to work. But as long as you're aligned properly, it'll unlock. But yes, Generation 2 absolutely needs to work no matter which angle the phone is at compared to your face. And that's especially going to be important for the iPad. Because Bloomberg surprisingly had a scoop for once. Gurman heard that they are working on a new iPad with Face ID for next year. It will not have an OLED screen because that would be ruinously expensive. And I doubt that Samsung would be able to meet the demand for that. And it would cost Apple way too much money for panels that big. Especially the 12-inch model. Like, could you imagine a 12-inch iPad Pro with an OLED display? It'd be like
$2,000. It would look beautiful, but...
It
would be the cost of like a MacBook Pro or something.
Yeah.
Like an entry-level MacBook Pro, like $1,500 or something like
easily.
That.
Easily. So yeah, they're not doing that just yet. But they are going to add Face ID. They are going to shrink the bezels. And they're probably going to give the display rounded corners like the iPhone X. And they can do that because they do have a patent for flexible LED screens that can be different shapes. Mm. So it'll mostly look like a 10, except no notch because the true depth will be in the bezel itself. And then, the problem with the iPad, of course, and the reason why they have to figure out how to make true depth work at any angle is... the iPad can be any orientation at any time. So if you put the true depth at the top where the front camera normally is on the iPad, it's going to have to work no matter what direction the iPad is in, whether it's portrait or landscape or upside
down.
Yeah,
that's a bit tricky.
Yeah. So they're going
to
have to find a way.
Wants to be used in landscape a lot more.
Yeah. But they keep the camera at the top in portrait configuration. So if that holds true, they're going to have to figure it out. So then if they do that, that improvement will trickle to the iPhone next year.
Well, I mean, it's a bit predictable, but it's pretty much guaranteed that Apple's going to figure that out.
Yeah,
of course. They'll figure out a way to do this.
Yep.
I mean, they have the most insanely creative and talented engineering team of any company.
Honestly, they might... A really simple solution would just be to optically stabilize the cameras so that, like, no matter which way you turn the phone, it's always right side up or something. That'd be one way. Or they just figure out a way to recalculate your face at different angles of the sensors.
It sounds like the phone doesn't disappoint. So what else? I mean, I'm assuming that it has met and exceeded your expectations so far.
Oh, definitely.
So what else do you really, what are some of the standout features other than Face ID? How are the camera? Have you spent some time taking photos with the cameras?
Oh yeah.
Both front and back, actually. And I would like to follow up on our previous assumption that the camera on the front.
True depth.
Yeah. That the true depth camera on the front would bring you slightly better portrait mode or more accurate on more attempts at doing things like blurring out the background or deleting the background on your photos without screwing anything up.
Yeah, so far
obviously the feature is still in beta, but
yeah, it is definitely faster and seemingly more accurate, though it is still cutting certain things off. It does actually manage to get my facial hair though. I'm just looking at it right now. Like, it really depends on the lighting conditions, as with any feature like this. But
so the better the lighting, the more accurate it probably is going
to
be.
Yeah. It's definitely faster to activate the portrait mode than the back camera, which suggests it is doing depth mapping. But I think the feature is still in beta and they're working on tweaking it. I think we'll see it improve with subsequent software updates for sure.
Did you see the comparison? I think it was John Gruber that linked on Daring Fireball the 4K video comparison between the iPhone 10 and some $2,000 dedicated 4K camera.
Yeah.
It was quite impressive.
Yeah,
actually, I don't know if it was 2,000 or more than 2,000. It was a really expensive stand, and that's all it does is it's just a camera.
Yeah,
it's just a video camera.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the overall quality, yes, the video camera does win. But for everyday use, for replacing things like point and shoot, the iPhone is just way above that at this point. Like, not only can you now shoot 4K at 60 frames a second, you can also shoot 4K at 24 frames a second. So the iPhone essentially becomes a 4K video camera.
Why would you want to shoot it? Is 24p the 24 frames the standard is for movies?
Yeah,
yeah, you're right. That is the standard, with the exception of maybe some of the Hobbit movies that did that crazy high frame rate.
That was Peter Jackson playing around,
which looks weird.
Very weird.
Looks weird. But the only thing is about that frame rate, though, I feel like it handles, I guess it's okay. Like, 60 frame rates per second, though, is, I'm so used to that at 1080p because that's what I shoot on my iPhone 6S Plus. And I'm so used to that smooth look. Especially, it's really helpful for fast motion stuff.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it might look weird going down to 24 frames.
Yeah,
for fast motion.
But I tried using it.
But if that's what movies shoot at.
Yeah. I've tested a little bit and it definitely has that filmic quality to it, which is great.
Sure.
And the other nice thing, when you're shooting in RAW, it has like a really nice film grain.
That's cool. When you're looking at a 60 frame rate per second video. It definitely does look smoother, but you know when you're looking at it that you're not watching a movie. Like, it doesn't have that look of a film.
It
that
has
look, quote unquote look of a film is that frame rate.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, like,
faster, the only thing that has that faster frame rate usually is soap operas, which is why it's called the soap opera effect.
Which look really weird when you watch them.
Yeah. Because it used to only be done on soap operas, people associate that frame rate with like cheap content, basically.
Like, now, why can't we go down to 24 frames on older phones?
There
doesn't seem any reason. I can shoot it at
30. It should be possible. It's just that they added it as an official option.
All right.
So that's on the 8 as well. So 2024 is available on the 8, 8 Plus, and 10. And then, of course, 4K 60, which is awesome. And then 1080p slow-mo is now up to 240 frames a second. So double the slowness.
Wow.
Well, they already had 240, but it was at 720p. Now you can do full 1080 at that frame rate,
right,
which is awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I would expect that that repertoire will only increase as the A-series chips become more powerful.
Now, what about the profile of the phone? It's obviously quite a bit smaller, noticeably smaller.
Yes.
And more comfortable to hold than a 6S Plus. It's weird because it's deceptive when you look at it because you know you're getting... Is it roughly the same screen real estate or more?
So the screen is taller than a Plus.
Right.
But not quite as wide.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you get the landscape weirdness, mm-hmm. but you get way more list items when you're scrolling through stuff and more available space for that, which honestly is a lot better because most of the time, you're scrolling through lists of things, or you're scrolling through a website, or you're reading something, right? And having that vertical real estate is really nice, especially because of the way the screen is shaped. And you've got just this screen that takes up the whole thing. And I think my favorite thing is probably the way the screen curves at the bottom. It just feels really nice. It kind of aligns perfectly with the actual shape of the hardware.
Yeah.
You just get this really nice look to it.
So what advice would you have? What do you have to say to anyone listening that might be reticent about the device because of the notch, which of course is the thing everyone wants to focus on?
Yes.
Is the notch a problem?
Absolutely not. I started using it and within 5 minutes, my opinion was... Yeah. What notch?
In both portrait and landscape?
I mean, landscape has some issues, but honestly, I haven't used landscape that much. Because
now, it would be more of an issue on apps that have not been updated for the iPhone X display, right?
Yes.
Because the UI needs to be rejiggered to support that, to support the notch.
Yeah, so...
And it's not like you showed me, obviously people listening to this can't tell, but... If you actually were to look at an app that was not optimized for the iPhone X side by side with one that was, you would see why it makes such a big difference. And once the app is updated, it's fine. It looks okay.
Yeah, like I've got Fantastical open.
Yeah,
and it's updated for the 10.
I can't even. I don't see the notch, but it's because their UI is black.
Yeah, so they kind of, well, it's an off black, so you can see it.
Not from 20 feet away, but yeah.
You can see it, but maybe not from this far away. But yeah, like they're kind of using the screen space rather effectively. They've mm-hmm. got padding on the left side so that the calendar events don't run into the notch. And you just have this nice scrollable view. You've got on the left side a list of all your events. And then on the right, you've got kind of an hourly calendar view for each day. And you can swipe through that as well. And then if you go back... to portrait, mm-hmm. it just goes back to the normal view.
I've only looked at the phone for a few minutes and I can already tell if I had one, it probably wouldn't bother me at all.
No.
It just looks like the way it was designed,
yeah.
like going back to what we were saying earlier, the UI that was tweaked by Apple, it looks like it's the notch is part of the design of iOS. So it does feel like it's kind of like it's meant to be there. It doesn't look like it was just put there for the sake of annoying you,
yeah,
it doesn't really become an issue.
Yeah. And as long as an app is updated, like honestly, most apps have this. Yeah.
YouTube is probably the most important because that's where people spend most of their time these days.
Yeah. And Netflix.
I don't know if Facebook's been updated for it, but because they don't put anything in the release notes.
No. Yeah. It is. Yeah. So, I mean, any app that's updated, it looks just fine.
Yeah.
Like TweetBot,
I think, got an update for that too.
It
right?
did. Yeah.
Yeah. How does that look, by the way, on the iPhone 10? So I'm gonna have to look closer, but yeah, it doesn't look like it's that big of an issue.
Yeah, it's fine. Like any app that's been updated looks great. It just looks great. And yeah, the notch is just not an issue.
And you don't think that they're gonna, like, by next year is too early for any kind of tweak to the hardware. Like that notch is probably gonna look exactly the same by next year's version.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't see that thing changing for the next at least 2 years minimum.
Probably
three
minimum.
Because
it's
not an easy engineering problem to solve.
No, and the thing is, they're going to be iterating on it. They're going to be adding functionality. So
adding more sensors, if any.
Yeah, like you can't make it smaller and also innovate in that space. Like, this isn't just about Face ID. This is about augmented reality and being able to sense things that are around the phone. They've got a patent for hand gestures, and that's going to be really important later when they have glasses.
And that's the thing is that if they wanted to get rid of the notch, the only way I can see them doing that is like this is an engineering trade-off where they either have the notch and it takes up a little bit of space, or they could have put a chin there on the older phone,
which would look really awkward,
would make it look old. Anyway,
yeah.
Because they already had the chin. They wanted to get rid of the chin.
So by embracing that part of the hardware, they ended up creating a unique screen shape, something that lets you know this is an iPhone. It has replaced the home button as effectively a street sign, if you will, like a big stop sign that says iPhone. Like that
Not just iPhone, but like this is fresh. This is something new to talk about.
Yeah.
And you hear it, like there's a lot of buzz around this product because people have been historically very bored with the last few iterations of iPhone that have been more or less, at least on the surface, they look more or less like people can't tell the difference and they don't know why they should pay money to upgrade.
Yeah.
But this one, this is a radical departure.
Oh yeah. So, this is a breath of fresh air. You know, this is the platform from which iPhone will continue to innovate and develop over the next decade. And more importantly, it's just great. Like they have spent so much time and effort on this thing and it really shows. Like,
and you've acclimated to the different gestures and all that sort of stuff already?
You pick that up within the first day.
Yeah.
Like you get used to it really quickly. Because
it's got to be a bit weird
at first, but once you get used to it, you kind of learn how it all works, and it's fairly intuitive in that way. Like you do figure it out. There's nothing that's like, oh, that's how you do that?
I don't swipe up from the bottom for control center. I do it from the top on the right hand side now.
Yeah. Like,
that gesture? You swipe on the right hand side from the top to get control center.
Yeah. You swipe from the right ear, if you will, of the notch to get to control center. And then swiping from the left one gives you notification.
Why do you
center.
Think they did it that way? Was it just because that's the only way they could really do it?
No, I don't think it's the only way they could have done it. There was in the code an indication that a 3D touch press from the left side and then swiping over would have brought up control center. So they were definitely experimenting with alternate ways to put control center on the screen. But I think for simplicity's sake, they ended up kind of emulating the way Android does it. Android has that quasi control center from the right hand side.
Then
they have notifications from the left-hand side.
So I didn't know that.
Apple's kind of mimicked it, but it works. And it's not just that they've overhauled the interface for this screen. They've also added a ton of novel little animations and transitions and bells and whistles all throughout. Like, they've really thought about some of this stuff. Like, you plug it in and the top right, this little battery just fades in and like zooms, like it kind of pulses green, and then it recedes back to reveal your signal and Wi-Fi information. But it puts the battery to the forefront, showing you that, yes, you have successfully plugged it in or put it on the wireless charging mat, and it's charging. And ditto for the left-hand side. Like, you know how the iPhone, when you have, when an app is tracking your location, or if you have wireless hotspot turned on, you'd have that big, ugly bar at the top.
Oh, that's the worst.
Okay, so on the iPhone
it's still
10,
there.
No.
In iOS 11 on my phone.
Yes, but on the iPhone 10, it's not.
Because of the notch.
There is no more bar. Instead, they have put a color-coded pill around the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
That, see, that, why don't they do that on older phones? Because it looks way better than to have the whole freaking top part of the screen. I guess it's more incentive to buy an iPhone 10.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to make the old phones fancy. What do you think this is?
Yeah, you never know. With iOS 12, that might trickle down, though.
It might.
Like, that might just be more like, this phone seems more like cutting edge, experimenting, taking risks.
Oh yeah.
Even with the UI.
Like,
I would not be surprised if some of those UI embellishments make their way down to iOS 12 on other devices next year.
It wouldn't surprise me. I think definitely the iPad for sure.
I don't think they want come on. I mean, like, do you really think Apple even wants last year's iPhone to look uglier? I mean, I don't think they intentionally want it to look uglier.
No, but I think...
Then again, they may not put the effort into
changing. Yeah, like, the thing is, iPhone 10 is the future. New iPhones moving forward will look more like the 10 and less like the 8. The time of that phone paradigm is over. Everything moving forward is going to be all screen.
It's very serious, very
with
final.
With a notch. Like, that is how iPhone is going to be.
Your time of rule is over.
Well, that's kind of how it is. It's like the old king has been usurped. King Notch, may he reign.
King Notch?
Oh, fuck. No, never mind. No, not that. Not that. Because that's that awful Minecraft guy. Not that. Yeah. King 10. I don't know. Whatever. But yeah, out with the old, in with the new. And 10 is new. So I don't know if there will still be an LCD iPhone next year. I do know that there will be a
Please
new...
Please, God, no. There Let's will, move the entire lineup over.
It's going to depend. It's going to depend if they can get enough OLED panels without Samsung
expensive
charging
right
them through the nose for them.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I really hope they can make that work.
At the very least, there will definitely be another iPhone 10 next year, and there will be an iPhone 10 Plus.
It'd be nice if they can knock $100 off the iPhone 10 next year, at least.
Well, if there's a Plus... Probably.
They're going to have to. They can't make that thing even more expensive than the already more expensive iPhone.
Here's what
that
I think.
Does,
here's,
yeah,
here's,
not gonna
yeah, here's what I think will happen. The iPhone 10 2 or the iPhone XS or whatever the hell they call it.
The triple X?
Yeah, I don't know. iPhone 10S and it's XS. Whatever it ends up being called. iPhone 11, I don't know. Whatever it ends up being called, the regular sized one will be the same price as the 8 Plus is right now. And then the Plus version of the phone will be the same price as the iPhone 10 is right now. So you're still going to have that super expensive phone, but then the regular sized version will go down in price. You're still getting a higher ASP. Because there's now no new phone that's at iPhone 8 pricing, but that technology is getting cheaper over time, basically. So the smaller phone gets cheaper, and then you still have the much larger Plus phone at the original expensive pricing. So the price goes up, but yeah, don't worry about it.
Okay, just hypothetically, I'm not saying this is going to happen. If Apple does keep the iPhone 8 design around for
one more year,
okay? Do you think it's possible? Can you see Apple lowering the price of that one a little bit so they can encourage more people to buy iPhone 10?
It wouldn't surprise me. Like if
would
they,
the iPhone 8
do,
design become the but quote unquote budget phone, the entry level?
I think I could see that. In fact, next year it could just be iPhone 9 and iPhone 10 and 10 Plus.
Brilliant. Or, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, I don't know. They skipped the 9. No, we didn't.
Yeah.
It's right here in 2018.
I don't know what they're going to do with the name next year if they can change it.
Yeah, they've really painted themselves into a corner here, I think. I don't know. I think just get rid of the numbers, to be honest.
Just call it all. It's all iPhone. All iPhone.
iPhone
Plus.
How big
do you want it and
there
how much
go.
Space do you want?
Yeah.
It's just an iPhone.
Yeah. The only thing is they always want like a new thing, so you know it's the new phone. Oh, this is the iPhone 8.
Yeah, but remember
this is
what
the iPhone 10.
They painted themselves into a corner with the iPad naming scheme a while ago. The iPad 2, which was really the iPad. I don't know.
No. They dropped the numbers
after the iPad 3.
For a while
they had a problem.
Well, they didn't even call it the iPad 3. It was the iPad with Retina display.
Okay.
And then they had...
But there was an iPad 2 for a while that was confusing because...
No.
They had...
That literally was the iPad 2.
Okay. I thought it was actually called iPad 2.
It was called iPad 2, but it came after the original iPad.
Oh, right. You know,
and
it was, of course.
And it was like 8 months later, so people felt kind of pissed off, but it was so much better than the iPad that they were like, okay, fine. Because... That was when it went from being that giant doorstop to being more like the iPads we use today.
Right.
Thinner, easier to hold, et cetera. And that's when they introduced the smart cover for the first time.
Didn't run hot. It was the iPad, the one that I sold to my sister, I think I had, it was the iPad 3.
Yeah.
That thing burned your balls. It ran
hot. The 3 was such a mess.
It was terrible.
Yeah, it was like the first MacBook Pro with a Retina display. They had a garbage
and the GPU. Didn't work well.
Yeah, exactly. They just threw it together to support the Retina display, and it was just a hot mess.
Because my memory is that because I remember selling my iPad 3, and then I thought I remembered the iPad 2 coming out after that.
Yeah, no,
which
it didn't.
What was confusing?
iPad
to
2
me.
Was non-Retina. And then they had the iPad 4, which they didn't call the 4. They again called it the iPad with Retina display. And then they had the iPad Air, and then the iPad Air 2.
And the minis.
The minis were numbered, which was interesting. But then they had iPad mini with Retina display. And
and you just go in the store and you're like, which one do I buy? Which one is the new model?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, they could definitely run into that if they drop the numbers or some kind of naming convention for sure.
Yeah.
But I think like where the hell do you go from 8 and 10? Do you have a 9? Do you go to 11? Like what happens now? I have no idea. So that'll be on their marketing department to figure that one out. So at the very least next year, we are getting a new 10 and a 10 plus. Which should have something like a 6.7 or 6.8 inch display, which is absurd because that's like nearly iPad mini size, but on a phone smaller than the current Plus.
Yeah.
Or
only made possible by the form factor and reduced bezels of the iPhone 10.
Exactly.
Nobody would accept a phone from Apple that big
on
the old iPhone 8
design. Oh, God, no. That would be like...
That's like
a Note 2. That's like a Galaxy Note 2-sized phone. But yeah, I think if you're still on the fence about the 10, like, A, if you can't afford it, don't worry about it because, you're still not going to be able to afford next year's either unless you start saving now, that is. But if you can afford the 10, but you're on the fence, like if you have the Plus and you're like, it's a big screen, but it's kind of not the same as the Plus, I would say wait for next year because there will definitely be a Plus and it'll probably be even better than the existing Plus because not only will we be getting the bigger screen again, but it's going to be dramatically bigger than even the current Plus. So at that point with iOS 12, I could see the 10 Plus getting features like split view, perhaps. Because then at that point, you could pretty easily run two iPhone apps side by side.
Yeah.
In landscape or portrait.
And the, what about picture in picture and stuff like that?
Hopefully, yeah. I know people have been asking for portrait in portrait on iPhone for a long time. And I think on the 10, it's definitely doable. So I don't see why not, particularly on the 10 Plus when it shows up. Like, that is going to be a massive screen.
Yeah, I mean, and it wouldn't be the first time that Apple has dabbled with some stuff like that. Because I remember when the Plus came out for the first time, there were some small UI things that it had that made you wonder, like, why didn't they just do this on the smaller 4.7-inch phone, but they didn't. Like, for example, like, do you remember, now they fixed it eventually, but it took a while. Do you remember when the Plus first came out? Do you remember when you opened the Messages app, how it would actually have the avatars of your contacts there?
Yep.
But on the 4.7-inch display, you couldn't see the picture of the person you were talking to.
Yeah.
So small little UI things like that. But eventually in iOS, I think it was iOS 10 that actually changed that.
Yep.
For the first time.
Yeah, it did.
So they, like, it's not the first time that they've done, like, made special exceptions for the bigger display because they think it looks better to fit more stuff on the screen.
Yeah. So, I mean, for that reason, we could totally see picture in picture, but only on the 10 Plus.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't think it would really make sense to do it on the smaller one.
Yeah. I think, like, I mean, a 6.8-inch display. Like, you
it's
can,
a lot of space
you
to
can
work
totally
with.
Have picture in picture on a panel like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So, I think
it's already kind of a two-handed phone for the most part to do stuff.
Well, it's plus size, but then, yeah, you've got this screen that's way bigger than any iPhone screen that's ever existed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there definitely have to be some affordances that get put into iOS 12 for that, for sure. On a bigger picture, though, I think iOS 12 will be a drastic reimagining of iPhone UI. I think the stuff in the iPhone 10 is kind of a taste of what's to come.
Didn't we say that for what iOS 11 was supposed to be?
I know, but then didn't
iPad,
do a new phone.
iPad UI.
But yeah, we got the iPad.
That's true. There was some
we got iPad
changes. We didn't get everything we wanted.
No, but we did get quite a bit of what we wanted. And I think that trend will continue in iOS 12. I think we'll see like a big UX rethink around the screen on the 10. I think it'll be like, okay, so we have this screen that takes up the entire front of the phone. What do we do with that? Like, we've already thought of some things. Like, you can see this trend towards apps being these windowed applications like cards.
Yeah,
swiping through them. Like, we're seeing that. And
I like that. I want to see more of it, actually.
Yeah, and I think we will. I think iOS 12 will continue with that trend and we'll kind of see the UX go into this convention where everything is filling the screen. One place I think they will look to inspiration, if you go into the App Store app and you open the Today tab, you'll notice that in the Today view, every article, every bit of news, every list is a card. And when you tap on that card, it springs open and fills the entire screen.
I don't think I get that animation on my phone.
Oh.
I could be wrong.
Well,
I haven't checked.
If it's 10 only, then that's kind of a hint at what's to come, probably. But yeah, so you get this list of cards, and then you tap the card, and it just unfolds to fill the screen. And I think that's probably what we'll start to see more of in iOS 12, where things get bigger, you get more of this emphasis on a full screen experience, content filling the screen, being able to see more things, stuff along those lines. I honestly don't know exactly what it'll look like, but I think we will definitely see changes along those lines moving forward as iOS hardware in general moves towards this zero bezel design. Because obviously the iPad is also going to get closer to zero bezel next year with the Face ID model that they're working on. So yeah, it's definitely a trend, I think, that we'll see continue.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.